Welcome to the fifth in the Common Wheel Policy podcast series. We are joined today with George Kerevan, who is an economist, former SNP MP, someone who has been speaking and writing a lot about a whole range of issues in relation to independence strategy and also the Growth Commission, and of course has a column in The National. And also by Craig DL, who is the, as you'll know, the head of policy here at Commonweal. And this podcast, I guess, is something which I think lots of people want to engage with as we run up to the SNP conference, where the Growth Commission will be debated in various ways. And we're going to go through some of the issues, what the stakes are, and looking forward to the conference itself. George, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here. I wonder if we could just kick off with some kind of opening remarks from yourself about where you think things are and maybe general thoughts about the Growth Commission, how you think it's going to move forward from this point.
Sure, Jonathan. Thanks for inviting me to broadcast. You know, I actually think we've moved on a bit since the Growth Commission report was published last spring. For anybody who has not read the whole 354 pages, which are not the most exciting read, it came in three bits. There was a bit which was really about boosting growth and adopted some very strange, from my point of view, exemplar economies for Scotland to follow, including the disastrous New Zealand, which is the most neoliberal economy you can imagine. I thought it was very strange. And there was a middle bit of the Growth Commission report, which was all about fiscal policy. It was a bit ambivalent about borrowing and spending. And the final bit, right, squeezed in at the end, was the bit about currency. And it was almost the way I read it, as if Andrew Wilson wanted to park the currency debate. Yes, we might have a Scottish currency, but it would only be in the far future, and the other things would have to be dealt with: growth and sorting the deficit. Now, when the Growth Commission was read by the SNP membership in the three big national assemblies, I think SNP leadership got a fright, because the membership were not convinced. After all, these are the folk who had knocked on doors, tapped on doors, for 2-3 years in the run-up to the 2015 referendum, and they saw the disaster of the then currency position, which keep pound. Didn't work. We didn't have a convincing answer when that policy fell apart. So the membership thought, yes, we need to sort the currency issue. Scotland needs to have its own currency post-independence. Now, in looking at where we are now, we're looking at the huge mega motion that Derek Mackay and Keith Brown have put to conference. The currency issue has been upgraded a bit. I think the SNP leadership is now being forced, as a result of confronting the membership, have been forced to accept there will be a Scottish currency. It's now much more prominent as a policy. Now, that is still, you know, caveats, and there's still a question to be debated as to what has to be achieved before, in terms of financial arrangements, before you get a Scottish currency, and the timetable for a Scottish currency is still open to big debate and conflict. But I think we have now pushed the leadership to the position of saying there will be a Scottish currency, and raised the prominence of that as part of the IndyRef 2 debate. And I don't think, I'll finish on this, I don't think the leadership has quite grasped, having committed much more fulsomely to a currency than Andrew Wilson did in the original version of the Growth Commission report. Having committed to that, you can't leave it hanging there. You have to be very specific about how you'll introduce it and the timetable. Otherwise, that will come to dominate IndyRef 2 debate.
And Craig, just one of the things that George points out there is these national assemblies that took place. I know you do a lot of meetings across the country, yes groups and other forums as well. What's your sense of where the grassroots, if we can put it like that, of the movement lie when it comes, I guess, not just to currency, but to the Growth Commission as a package?
It's fair to say that among the membership, there's still a big, a strong feeling of we don't know enough about this very complex, very technical issue to form an opinion. But that is changing. There are, you know, this issue has been very well discussed over the past year or so, and previous to that even. And more people are coming down on the side of an opinion, and almost everyone I speak to who thinks they know enough to have a valid and informed opinion on this says that an independent Scotland needs its own currency. I've found virtually no one out there who is actively advocating for the Growth Commission's position, and I really say that genuinely, not just as someone trying to make a political point.
And when you talk about Scotland needing its own currency, George, I wonder if in quite a simple way this could be explained. Why is having a currency, an independent currency, so important when it comes to the economy and building the kind of economy we want to build? Because I think that that has to be kind of unwrapped in a way, because it can get complicated. So why an independent currency?
Right, you need your 30-second argument for the doorstep. Number one, if you have your own currency, you set your own interest rates. Interest rates govern what you pay for your mortgage, but they also govern ultimately what industry invests and how fast you grow. So if you don't control your own currency, you don't control your own interest rates will be set by the Bank of England, as at the moment, and they'll be set in the interests of the London banks and the London economy. The longer we keep sterling, the longer we are still in the throw of being run financially and economically. There's a second set of reasons, and it's to do with how governments borrow money. If we keep sterling, then a Scottish government, an independent Scottish government, would still have to go cap in hand to the London financiers to borrow, and they'd have to pay back in sterling, and where would we get sterling? If you have your own currency, then that would make it that basically what would happen is the Scottish government would be borrowing from the people of Scotland. So that would be the contract. And it would allow the Scottish government actually to borrow more. I'm not an advocate of Scotland, borrowing, getting yourself into huge debt. But it's easier for a government who issues his own currency to borrow from his own people. And that makes, therefore, it easier to avoid austerity and to actually invest in the infrastructure and the training you need to make your economy.
Well, very concise and compelling.
Yep.
And Craig, I know something that's also been discussed is the potential obstacle sterlingisation could provide when it comes to things like EU membership. Wonder if you just take us through a bit about that.
Well, this is one of the big, as far as I can see, contradictions of the Growth Commission, where they come down quite firmly on Scotland being a member of the EU, which I personally agree with. But they've set up this barrier in the form of the currency. One of the entry requirements for the EU, and set aside the argument that's been well thrashed out over whether Scotland would or not would not be forced to use the euro once a member, this is about becoming an EU member in the first place. One of the requirements is that you have your own central bank and that it is able to demonstrate that it can use the tools of a central bank responsibly. If you don't have your own currency, it doesn't have the full tools available to it, therefore cannot demonstrate compliance with EU rules. Further, post-Brexit, we can't guarantee that the UK would be following EU rules. It's not going to be bound to it. It's going to be trying to forge its own global Britain destiny. Scotland would probably find it very difficult to join the EU while being so economically dependent on a country that's just left.
Now, obviously, these are big issues, and we know that there's going to be discussion about this at the SNP conference. As you said, George, the motion is a mammoth motion where there's lots of things that could be debated in there. There, of course, is limited time at the conference. And there's been an attempt to focus, I think, on the removal, the deletion of these six currency tests. Without going through each test, why is it, though, that you think that that this is important? What do these six tests mean in terms of gaining and bringing about an independent currency?
Well, the six tests, they appear like magic at the end of the Growth Commission report. There's no explanation as to why the 6 as opposed to 5, 3, or 7, or 8. And they're not actually explained or given any great validation. They're just there. So presumably some of the many expensive consultants who had to put an input into the Growth Commission came up. It would be more sensible to have developed the argument about the 6 tests. But they boil down to something very simple, that the Scottish government would not introduce a currency until it had satisfied the financial community, which would be, in this case, the London financial community, because they would be doing the lending during the sterilisation period when we're still using the pound. We'd have to convince them that we were a solid proposition, that we were sensible financially in order to run our own currency, and that people would still want lending to us. So, I mean, essentially, you're still, you know, I mean, to adopt a Jacob Rees-Moggism, we'd be a vassal state of the financial community in London.
Yeah.
And if you think you're ever going to persuade them, because the only way you'd persuade them to give you the clean bill of health would be if you entered into a period of serious financial austerity and cut the budget, the public deficit, to whatever the bank wanted. And so you end up in this circular argument. You know, we have to get the economy, we have to impose a fiscal austerity regime, which is bound to slow growth and bound to increase social divisions, in order to convince the banks so we can have our own currency. But the whole point of having your own currency is to be able to invest and borrow in a way that expands the economy. So it's putting the cart before the horse.
I mean, this, to be blunt, sounds like a recipe for disaster, to be honest. And one of the things that has been discussed over recent months and since the publication of the Growth Commission, Craig, is that this idea that, well, doesn't matter if this becomes policy, because once we get a yes vote, then there'll be elections and people can debate and discuss then how to take things forward. But I think it's worth making clear for people some of the problems with that reasoning, that in fact the Growth Commission would become, if it became policy, would become the negotiating position and therefore hardwiring all of the things that have just been outlined into the process of setting up a new state.
It would certainly set the frame and the foundation for that negotiating position. Mm. That's the purpose of the Growth Commission. Even beyond that, if you start setting up systems that are hard to change, then you set up the sterlingisation with the 6 tests. Even an incoming government that, you know, has voted in on a mandate to change that and wants to change that has to kind of go against the grain of all the infrastructure that has been set up to run that system.
Mm.
Whereas if we, for example, launched a currency quickly and, for example, pegged it to sterling, then if we decided, right, this isn't optimal for Scotland, it's time to change that peg or drop it, that can be done much more quickly. Governments can be much more responsive.
Mm.
But if you set up this system where you've sterlingised and now you're going to take a period of years to pass the test and then probably a period of years after that to launch the currency once you've decided to do it, it's a lot less nimble, it's a lot less responsive to the demands of a democracy.
We should probably explain the notion of pegging a currency.
Yeah, please. Who don't
follow this. I fully respect that if we have our own Scottish currency, one of the questions people will raise is, what is this currency worth? You know, if my pension is being paid in euro Scottish money, now I need to know who can buy things in the shop. Now, one way of making that clear is to, for the Scottish government and monetary authorities that are created, to say, well, we will intervene in the financial markets, the foreign exchange markets, buying and selling currency, to ensure that a Scottish currency maintains some kind of a fixed relationship called a peg with other currencies and particularly with the pound, so that when you did your calculation or you went south of the border and went to your cash line machine, you would know exactly what the Scottish pound was worth in a broad range compared to a pound sterling. Now, that's to introduce another level of complexity into things we're trying to explain, but It's fairly simple to do, and for instance, in Europe, the Danes have their own currency, but they have linked it, pegged it in phraseology, to the euro, because they do most of their trade with Germany and they want to keep some broad relationship. So it would be possible to do that. And I think that's one of the ways in which you could satisfy people that Scottish pound would even know what it was worth.
Well, that's a very useful explanation. And of course, beyond the question of currency, there's all of the stuff around the annual solidarity payment, which we've already done a podcast on, a full podcast on. There's all of the stuff around flexi work and financial regulations and all of these aspects which come together to make this report. And it does worry me, because does this represent some kind of trend? How do you think the general picture looks when you add in the question of an independence referendum and where that might be going as well? What do you think the priorities are for the independence movement just now?
I mean, I personally think that with the political chaos at Westminster, which we now know could continue for several years, that we can't in Scotland just sit on the sidelines. That we need to take an initiative so that we are determining our own history. And I seriously worry that if the Brexit negotiations continue, whatever side you are on when it comes to Brexit, then it leaves growing political and economic uncertainty. It's having a major impact on the Scottish economy. And the Scottish government, even though it makes all the right noises, is not doing it. So I think we have to call for IndyRef 2 as soon as possible and put the maximum pressure on London to allow that. And from our perspective, that it is actually quite good to have a debate in Scotland about the future of our economy. And I'm perfectly happy to take the Growth Commission report as a starting point, but it's not an end point. And my biggest worry about the Growth Commission as an economic model is it's so backward looking. It's looking at a world of Scandinavian and small European economies in a world of economic growth rather than the period we're now entering of trade wars, of economic contraction, growing unrest. And all of the countries, in fact, that Andrew Wilson had used as examples, most of them, he's used examples for Scotland to follow, have gone into a real economic crisis. If you look at New Zealand, which is one of the big growth, one of the big examples given in the Growth Commission report, massive public sector strikes over the last year because of the levels of austerity. So we can't, for economic reasons and for political reasons, we can't sit on the sidelines. We need to move to IndyRef 2 as fast as possible.
George, do you think it's noteworthy that in the Growth Commission, all of their comparator countries, they had countries that had their own currencies, they had countries that had pegged currencies, they had countries that were members of the Eurozone. Do you think it's noteworthy that they didn't have any countries that were sterlingised or dollarised the way that they are proposing for Scotland?
Well, it was peculiar in the third section on currency. They didn't look at the options and the difficulties. There was a lot of cherry picking going on, particularly when he choosing example countries. Andrew had cherry picked different economic indicators from different countries, neatly ignoring some of the worst things that were going on. And so we get Sweden, for instance. Sweden is the neoliberal nightmare at the moment, the right wing government, which is slashing taxes, has huge social unrest and racial unrest. I mean, the model that those countries followed is starting to fail. So we need our own model, and in particular, when it comes to currency. I mean, there are a range of countries that have adopted other countries' currency independently of those other countries. They're entering into a formal deal. A practical example is over the euro. Some of the Balkan countries use the euro, but they're not in the EU, and they don't actually have formal approval of the European Central Bank to do what they're doing. And that runs into difficulties. Yes, you can, anybody's free to use anybody's currency. Countries have always across the world used the dollar, for instance. But the problem is if you do it without a formal monetary arrangement, then where do your banks get access to the currency that you decided to use? What happens, and this is the real killer, what happens if you as a government, having issued, having borrowed in a currency that isn't yours, how do you pay back if anything happens? Where do you get access to the funds? And that can lead to a crisis of interest rates being pushed up and so on. There are technical difficulties. It's possible, perfectly possible to run an economy for a sustained period of time using somebody else's currency. But the difficulties pile up. And actually, there are not that many examples of countries using big countries, sizable countries, sizable industrial countries like Scotland, using another currency for a long period of time without entering into a formal monetary union with their partner country, without real difficulties emerging.
And Craig, something that you and I have debated is the whole question of the EU and Brexit and the implications and all of the issues that brings. But I was interested in what George was saying about Scotland's position within this crisis, which looks to be something that's going to go on for a very long time. I think that was always clear from the outset. And Nicola Sturgeon's position has always been, let's wait until the fog of Brexit clears and then we can move forward. And I'm just wondering whether or not you agree with George in terms of Scotland making more of an impression on the political situation via independence and indirect, and how you think that fits into this discussion.
The problem with sailing into the fog and waiting for it to clear is that sometimes you hit the rocks before it does. So I am getting a little bit worried that, you know, we were previously told in the next few months we'll find out what's happening, then in the next few weeks, then in the next few days, and well, we've just had another extension on Brexit, and one that is even foggier than before, because now Brexit Day could really be tomorrow or the next day or the next day for the next 6 months. The UK can leave whenever if it ratifies the deal. We don't have a set date anymore. So we can't just sit and wait for Brexit to become clear. It's not going to become clear until it's too late. We need to start discussing the hypotheticals, discussing the range of options that could happen. What is the IndyRef situation if we crash out with no deal? What is it if May's deal passes? What is it if there's a UK customs union? What is the IndyRef plan if Brexit is revoked? I don't think that, you know, the constitutional question is just going to disappear if Brexit does. So we need to be prepared for all options. We need to be starting to discuss all options.
So just coming towards the end now, I look at the situation and see the Growth Commission and see a lack of movement around not just even calling for an independence referendum, but actually making independence and the case for independence front and centre of the Brexit crisis and expanding out the question of the democratic deficit from there. I mean, in fact, the call for a second EU referendum is elevated above all of that when it comes to the present position of the SNP. And seeing this come together, there's, I think, quite high stakes now in terms of the future of the independence cause, of the independence movement. And I'm thinking that without a referendum, and if the Growth Commission passes, if these two things combine, you're then looking at a Holyrood election where we're not sure whether or not there would be a pro-independence majority. And this, to me, then feels like quite a change from 2014 and the development of the movement since 2014. Do you think the stakes are that high, George?
Oh, absolutely. The stakes have never been higher, because if we, as an independence movement, fumble the moment, we could end up being trapped for the next generation in what could be called a mad English nationalist state. I think we need to start to move forward on various fronts. I think, given the chaos of Westminster and given the fact that people can't realise that there is chaos and that no one is minding the shop, it's time for the Scottish Government to begin to take steps that challenge the authority of Westminster. I'll give you one example. One very good initiative the Scottish Government is proceeding with is the creation of the Scottish Investment Bank, which should be up and running, all things go well, next year. I think that we need to get that investment bank, public owned investment bank, up and running. I think we need to capitalize it. And I think we need to challenge some of the Treasury rules about what it can raise in money and what it can invest in money. Because there's a crisis in the economy and firms are in trouble because bizarrely at the moment, there's been an uptick in economic growth because firms are actually investing so much in stockpiling, uselessly stockpiling, in case Brexit and the hard Brexit suddenly arise. So it just shows you that some daftness in the GDP figures, which don't prove anything. But you know, a Scottish investment bank publicly would be able to pump money into sectors of the economy which are in trouble, which are able to nationalise, which has been able to develop infrastructure. In other words, we take control of our own destiny, and you can do that at all these levels, not just wait for constitutional change. And I think it becomes easier to argue for constitutional change if you are doing things, practical things in the Scottish economy, and you're being told to stop by Westminster. Then you actually can go to people on the doorstep and say, well, we're doing this. We're being stopped from doing very, very important things. We're stopped from building bridges, stopped from building roads, stopped from training people. And I think that kind of approach, that muscular approach to the political situation. I mean, this is the 100th anniversary of Irish independence. And the Irish just, they elected MPs in the 1919 election, and they just decided to organise their own state. You don't wait always for other people to tell you what to do, especially if no one's in charge at Westminster.
Well, I think that lays things out very well there, Craig. And I'm just thinking, from a Commonweal point of view, your kind of last comments on this. What's the agenda on the run-up to the SNP conference? And what do you think Commonweal can be doing to constructively oppose the Growth Commission in the next couple of weeks?
Well, we've been laying out a number of challenges to advocates to try and encourage a bit more debate directly from the Growth Commission, from those who support it, to try and resolve some of the contradictions, like the EU issues we mentioned. We're going to be producing a little bit more of that over the next couple of weeks, but we're also getting on with producing more policy papers that can hopefully drive the independence agenda. We've got one coming out next week that we'll probably be talking about on the podcast. I'm not sure how much I can mention about it right now before we launch it, but keep an eye out for that in the next day or two. It's definitely going to be of people's interests. And beyond that, we're going to keep on building the foundations for, you know, a Commonweal Scotland and hopefully creating a vision that people can vote for, can, you know, show what Scotland could be and how we could become that country.
Well, with that, thanks very much for the contributions. I should say that Craig has written an open letter on some of these matters to Derek Mackay, which you can find on Common Space, and we'll link to that as well. But that really did go around a lot of people, and I think there really is now a big debate that's opened up. And these next couple of weeks are going to be very important for the next couple of years, if not more, for the direction of the independence movement and about its futures. As always, do share the links. We need this to get out to as many people as possible. We want your feedback as well. It's been fantastic to have George on the show, and we'll be having a range of guests from across the independence movement as we build this podcast. So give us your feedback, questions, and also suggestions as well for guests and topics that you would like us to cover. And I always have to end with this, but for good reason. We are funded on a shoestring basis despite all of the output that we are putting forward. So if you can, please do donate. You can do so through our website, and that helps us to expand our operations. Let's see what happens. It's been great to talk today, and we will be back in touch for the next podcast this time next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.